Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast for Friday, January 20th, 2017. I'm Bruce Mitchell, Senior Torch Columnist, and we'll be joined momentarily by Rich Fahn from Pittsburgh. Travis Bryant is on assignment. Of course, you can listen to, you can download PW Torch Livecast with Travis and what's his name? Editor-publisher Wade Keller from Wednesday. Lots to talk about today, including the Jimmy Snuka email that was sent to WWE Network subscribers alerting them that there is a special Jimmy Snuka section in honor of his passing on last Sunday with on the network with some matches on it, which has got some attention. And VIP members hopefully have had a chance to read my column on this called A Fantastic Proposal. Some people have really, I don't want to say liked it, but have appreciated it. And quite the situation with Mr. Snuka. Also, word has come out that WWE has pulled some of the UK talent that was recently on their UK tournament last weekend, and from participating in some shows they were booked for, or at least changing their participation because of not wanting them to work for competitors like Flow Slam. So that was interesting. That was interesting. So we're a week away from the Royal Rumble, and usually Royal Rumble sets up some stuff for WrestleMania, and of course Royal Rumble is big on its own. So let's go ahead and get Rich online. Rich, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thanks for having me again, Bruce. Happy to help.
Appreciate it. Did a great job last week. Glad you're hooked up for this one too. So, what are you thinking what was your reaction to the 3-minute video with Jimmy Snuka on Monday? And then kind of still paying tribute to him. It is that opportunity with the WWE Network that they can go and pull together some matches and make a quick section or a quick little show when, WWE Hall of Famer dies, or a famous wrestler that they can do that and pay tribute to him. The problem is that Jimmy Snuka was indicted on manslaughter charges and the death of his girlfriend Nancy Argentina, and there was a lot of murkiness 30 years ago, and finally the charges were dropped just because of the diminished capacity of Mr. Snuka in the last few months of his life. What's your reaction to all this?
Well, on Monday, I thought it was a step too far because they did the placard at the beginning before their MLK tribute, which is another, conversation I'm sure we can have. And then later on in the show, doing the highlight, I thought that was a step too far. But then the double down and email, it seems to be something that Vince McMahon wanted to prove he could do, which makes it pettier and makes it sad considering the circumstances surrounding him as Argentina and all the fun stuff.
Well, there's two parts to this as far as what was the motivation. One of them is it was tone deaf and not paying attention, and the other one is doubling down and knowing exactly what they're doing. And I don't know which way it is. I know which way I assumed Monday night. I had had a conversation with Jim Valley, who of the Wayback Playback, and of course from Portland, Oregon, which is where Jimmy Snuka really left a lot of footprints as far as professional wrestling goes. And and I just thought the only way to play this is to put the Rest in Peace placard up at the beginning of the show, and that would be about it, because frankly, I mean, it's not, you know, he had, you know, Jimmy Snuka had not only been involved in this death and had come up with some very murky explanations for the crushed skull of Nancy Argentina, but he had been arrested before for attacking her and had a history with this. And it was there was enough evidence even at the time that eyebrows were seriously raised when all of a sudden just nothing happened, and that Vincent Mann, the one we know today, had come on behalf of his father and behalf of the company and met with authorities in the case, and then everything just kind of faded away in this small town. And you know, I just figured it wasn't something they would want to look at, but I also know that, honestly, I think that in this, you know, I think we've seen another example of this in this country where it's just the attitude is just screw you, you're fake news anyway, I'll do what I want. And I wonder whether that wasn't involved here. I mean, I just, you know, I don't know. I try not to plug my own stuff too much, but I'm proud of what I wrote this week, and I hope the VIP members go and read what I wrote about all this on Tuesday night. So I told Jim that I just thought they would do that and they would just do the placard, and then when he went all in, I was I can't say I was shocked, because I know the type of people that we cover, and but this was, you know, this took some nerve. And I think that McMahon is right in the sense of, I don't know that the brushback's going to be very much on him. But for people who know the story, it's even more importantly for the Argentina family, I mean, it's just one more 30 years of, and they did their, you know, they did their sister, their daughter proud by pursuing this all these years and pursuing justice. And they didn't get it, but this is, you know, again, this is a slap in the face. I mean, but as I said, you know, we value, it's funny to me, I'm a fan of wrestlers and all that, but this, and I was a fan of Jimmy Snuka's, but the idea that these guys who portray heroes have to be real heroes, and things like this just kind of swept to the side, remembering the fake for the real. I'm really uncomfortable with it. So
one thing I would say, yes, I would definitely agree with you completely with your article. I'm not just a stand-in host. I'm also a VIP client, if the commercial holds. So I would definitely recommend anyone who has VIP to read Bruce's article. And in terms of this, I think, to be honest, the McMahon family, and this is anyone in general with sports or, I guess, you know, American culture, there's this level of ignorance that is veiled upon them that they use as a shield when it's appropriate, and they use it as a sword in cases like this when it's not. And it's the same thing as, you know, earlier today during the inauguration, I saw that Stephanie McMahon put up a tweet that said, you know, regardless of your background, look at the peaceful transition and all this stuff. And I just read five responses deep. I'm like, I hope her assistant put this up, because her phone is probably going to explode in a second. And I look at it, I'm a Bills fan. Anytime I go to Buffalo and I go to watch them play, I look on that Wall of Fame and O.J. Simpson's still there, and they won't give out his number. And to me, just like with this, with Snuka, I think it would be a lot more in the healing process to take his name down, give someone else his number. I don't care if it's a backup running back or third-string corner, but the sooner you can start to flush this idea of reverence being tied to athletic excellence, the sooner it is that the people who were affected by the situation can actually grieve and accept that, you know, someone outside of their family is a human being.
Yeah, that's well said. And as much as I am like you, and probably like everybody listening, a sports fan, much as I am a wrestling fan, there are things in this world that are more important. And when we lose sight of that, the sports and the entertainment careen out of control, and I think we've seen some of that in our culture. I agree with that. I'm a voter in the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame, and I really was, and I voted for Chris Benoit to be in it, obviously, and then I voted for Chris Benoit to be removed from it, and it bothers me that he wasn't. It bothers me that there that that, I mean, even in a business sense, that it bothered me because it was just the horrific selfish acts that he took, murder and suicide, are more important than the fact that he was a very good wrestler in the ring and did more damage to the business than no matter how sentimental or how great that scene was at WrestleMania when he won the title. I mean, it doesn't even come close. And that I think people lose track of that sometimes, and particularly in professional wrestling, because it's built on a facade, and a lot of things in this world are built on that facade. And it's fine when you're entertained by it, but it's also, there's some things that, there are definitely many things that are more important than being entertained. And that's tough. So we've got a lot of callers, but before we do that, Rich, and I should have done this last week. I want you to talk about, I want you to plug what you work with Travis, but I also just want you to talk about what you do and what you do with the Buffalo Bills and kind of how you come to, I mean, just talk about your writing and what it is that you do.
Oh, sure. Well, I got into the Torch originally because one of my best friends, who will probably call in at some point if I'm guesting in the next, year or so, Chris got me into the Torch because he was a big fan of your writing and a big fan of your audio show with Wade. And he finally kept getting on my case about buying a membership. And it was one of the months where it was like a 99-cent deal, so I signed up, and that led me to you guys. And then eventually I started, because I coach football here in the area, I started listening to the East Coast cast on Wednesdays after I got done with our players, because I needed to come home and decompress, and they were on till about 9, 10 o'clock, and it was something where I could listen and do my dishes or do my laundry, and I wouldn't have to worry about one, doing anything but laughing, and then talking and listening about wrestling. So that led me to chatting with Travis a little bit online and off. And I want to say about 2 years ago, a member of mine passed from cancer, and that's when I kind of made a decision of, I'm going to start doing things I like because time is short. And that's what led me first to the Bills as far as writing, blogging about them. I helped do a blog, Buffalo Wins, for the 8 people I'm sure that might be Bills fans. And on that, I started writing about wrestling, too, occasionally. Like, I'd write about the Rumble or any of the big four that were coming up. And that, in turn, Travis read a couple, retweeted it. Shahid, Cam, and some of the other guys would read them and give me feedback. And then that eventually led to me calling into the East Coast cast. And then when Dre dropped out, stepping in occasionally because Travis and I shared some interest in science fiction and reading. And then for the last almost year, I've been doing the VIP with him, opposite Cam, doing the free-to-listen portion that's live. And then that led me to talking to you because you and Travis are so close. And now I'm in the backup seat as far as the QB off the bench. And really, that's all been possible because of all those fun things, just that one day paying 99 cents. This is like an infomercial, so I apologize to anyone that's awesome. Listening is like, oh my god. But yeah, so that's really me in a nutshell. I'm a big wrestling fan. I primarily started with WWE and then moved, because I grew up in New York City, and then moved into NWA and in college, and then Japan in college because eBay was brilliant. And now I watch a lot of WWE, a lot of old stuff, but mainly I watch a lot of Evolve and Progress and all these indies that we can now get with the internet, and of course New Japan.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a whole stream of easier to get the high quality wrestling, and as far as easier to watch in the high quality wrestling. It's a very interesting time, and I think now we're starting to see WWE reacting to that, and not always in positive ways. So,
absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the stuff that went down the last couple of days, in terms of part of it, I also put on the talent because they didn't have to sign those contracts, but when the wolf's at the door, you're going to kind of make the decision you make. And so, yeah, so to see Flow Slam get hooked and all of a sudden have to pull people, and to see all of a sudden talent can't go on to certain shows, that's really kind of the crux of what you were writing about 2 or 3 weeks ago, where they are buddy-buddy. They're arms around your shoulder for the picture, but you got to watch the other one because that's the one you're not seeing coming.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, being a longtime fan and remembering going from the territorial system to a more monolithic system, and it was what was going to happen because of technology. It was, someone was going to be the major league of professional wrestling, or there's going to be no professional wrestling. One of the two things were going to happen, as they and they were going to battle it out. But I just remember all, I remember how this worked, and it was a little more forward. It wasn't as much buddy-buddy, but it's still the same. It's still the same man in charge. It's still the same philosophy. So we're going to get to some phone calls in just a second, but let's take time out for these commercial messages from the Worldwide Wrestling in your area.
When you're looking to tune in live to the PW Torch Livecast, find out about the next episode, or just catch up on an episode you missed, go to our new website, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can select shows by specific day, specific host, and format, including a grid of our latest interviews and best of selections on the homepage. That is pwtorchlivecast.com, where you can stream our show live and listen to past shows on demand. That's pwtorchlivecast.com.
So let's go to our friend, Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
How you doing today, Bruce and Rich? How y'all doing today?
Good, man. Thanks for asking.
Okay, okay. I want to start off with a nice little easy question. I asked this on the live cast with East Coast Cast, but I want to hear you and Rich today talk about it, Bruce. On Tuesday, SmackDown, they said about the Elimination Chamber, and they said it was going to be for the title. I thought it was a clever, almost, they wasn't trying to give away maybe the, who was going to win or what brand was going to win the Rumble, but in my eyes, I kind of figured it's kind of an idea that they're letting you know that a Raw guy is going to win the Rumble. What do you think about that?
Tell me why, Darrell. Tell me why that's a tip off that a Raw guy will win because of the Elimination Chamber being on the next
page. Just because if a Raw guy did not win the Rumble, it would be because they have that day pay-per-view coming up March, just a few weeks before Mania, and it'd be hard for them to build somebody up as a contender for the Universal title or anything as that. So I was thinking that they would have all these weeks setting that up, and you can always use the Elimination Chamber as a way to set up a competitor for the title or the ending of that match or something like that.
Rich, what's your reaction to this?
Well, with the Elimination Chamber coming up, with that in-between time, I don't know if it's signaling that a SmackDown guy is going to win the title. If anything, it's just as likely that you put yourself in a situation where you could, quote-unquote, course correct and get to whatever WrestleMania title match you wanted, even with the SmackDown brand. If, say, AJ retains, Undertaker wins the Rumble, and Cena wins at Elimination Chamber, we still got from point A to point C without any real major damage, quote-unquote, to whatever storyline they wanted to run.
Yeah, you can definitely do that. And then the other thing is, they can, you know, they have put, they've put that honor of WrestleMania up on television. I mean, of WrestleMania main event up on television, up on Raw, and changed it. You can do that. Whatever their plan is going to be is going to be their plan. I don't trust that altogether. I thought that I thought, Darrell, that what you were going to say was it was a giveaway. The Elimination Chamber being talked about before the Royal Rumble was something of a giveaway that John Cena was not going to beat AJ Styles in the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, that was it. I already figured that John Cena was a way. This was a way to maybe even set up a way for you to get John Cena versus The Undertaker without it being a title match, by maybe letting John Cena beat Undertaker in the chamber or vice versa, and getting John Cena out of the title match and setting up a couple of big matches, and maybe, I don't know for sure, but if AJ Styles come out with the Elimination Chamber with more to brag about, and they kind of threw in tie-ins with him and Shane on Tuesday, and I know they said it might be Shane versus AJ to give AJ a big match at Mania, since they say a McMahon is always a big match. That's another way for him to brag and to talk about how they was talking about he's had the best year, first year ever of all time, as a way the big bad first year of all time coming to Mania to take on a McMahon to maybe try to stop his first year shine. That's another idea I was thinking about.
Those are possibilities. I don't think Undertaker and John Cena is happening this year. We'll see, though. I mean, McMahon changes his mind really quickly. I just cringe at the idea of AJ Styles and Shane McMahon, and you know, Shane McMahon doing one of his big move matches with AJ, and it's going to be limited by what 46, 47-year-old Shane McMahon can do. And clearly AJ will beat him, but because that's part of it too. But I was curious where Shane fit into all this, but I'd like to see a better match I'd like them to take advantage of AJ Styles with a better opponent than that. But as far as AJ Styles goes, if you want to be in a match with Shane McMahon because you're going to be in one of the top matches on WrestleMania, and you're going to get paid that way. Rich?
And yes, and if you...
I'm sorry.
What were you going to say, Darrell?
I'm sorry. Sorry about that. Darrell, go ahead.
Oh, yes, and I was just thinking about that, why they was thinking about if... Because people were saying that it might be Braun Strowman versus Roman Reigns for the Universal title, and in my mind... main event match usually go at least 20 minutes, at least, especially for Mania. And if you're going to have Braun versus Roman, Shane versus AJ can't be even worse when we haven't seen Braun work over an 8-minute match. And I'm including entrance from both competitors and in ring. So if that's going to headline Mania, I don't see anything wrong with Shane, and even though I wouldn't want it, but Shane versus AJ, I just say that they finally let AJ get a top spot. That's how I would see it.
Well, he would get a top spot with that. I mean, you know, I think they'd be well served by not always having 20-minute main events, but that's, I don't know whether that's in play or not so far. Rich, what's your reaction to this?
Okay, so I'm in a situation where last year I was one of the fans that was excited, silly me, that Shane was coming back because he was the fun uncle that showed up and gave me candy, as Wade alluded to, and all the fun stuff for, like, candy for dinner and ice cream for breakfast. And
Oreo
when
cookies.
I saw the Survivor Series match, when he threw that first punch, I was like, oh, man, we're done here. Oh, wow. And it just got worse as the match went on. So I'm fast forwarding to WrestleMania, and if AJ Styles, I'm thinking of three of his signature spots alone right off the top of my head where AJ could seriously injure Shane because he may not be flexible enough to take the moves. Like his springboard, reverse DDT, the Styles Clash, of course, because as everyone always mentions, all it takes is for you to go with your natural instinct as a wrestler and you're going to duck your head. And just not being there to catch AJ for any of the acai moonsaults or any of the moves he'll do off the springboard.
Yeah, that's true. That's no doubt about it. I mean, I think Darrell hits on something, though, that's a positive for WWE right now, which is there are possibilities. Some of them are better than others, but there are possibilities coming into WrestleMania. In other words, it's not very predictable at this point. So that's something with Royal Rumble answering some of those questions should help Royal Rumble, you would think. Let's go to Kylan from New Jersey. Kylan, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast.
Thank you, Bruce. How are you and Rich this week?
Good, Kylan. Thanks for asking.
You're very welcome, Rich. My question for this week concerns future WWE talent recruiting policy and WWE business strategy. With WWE recently pulling all 16 participants in the UK tournament from doing any wrestling for promotions that are associated with Flow Slam, does this provide further credence to the theory that Triple H is killing a new form of territory, or perhaps creating new territories by eventually putting some international and North American promotions on the WWE network at some point?
There is interest in WWE doing that. We'll see how far, you know, it goes as far as what comes on their network. But I mean, if there's I wouldn't be surprised to see them make a deal with a smaller promotion in another country to add another little niche to that. But as far as it's the same old WWE. They do not like competition. I mean, they compete very quickly and with everything they can, and if someone is taking some attention away from them, or they feel that way, it's, you know, there's a burgeoning, there, you know, they've been hearing about the UK scene, and it's been getting some plaudits, and it's getting up and running better than it has in many, many years with crowds and that kind of thing, and so that's how they are. And I think it's more they don't want that world of sports getting going with Jim Ross getting going on television, and they don't want some other promotions doing well either. I want to definitely, Rich, what do you take of the newest developments? So what do you take with this?
I think one of the big things I'm waiting to see, because the Flow Slam I figured was coming, especially kind of, I'm in your boat when it comes to the situation that they're, it's more of a boa constrictor than a cobra, I guess, so to speak, in terms of how they're behaving with the UK indie scene. My biggest indicator is going to be looking at progress and looking at IPW and the shows that they're alleged to try to get into agreements with to get onto the network, because I doubt they're going to pull talent from those shows. Most notably, the fact that all of Progress's champions are now under contract to the WWE. And the first thing they did after the UK tournament was broadcast that those guys are going to be in Orlando for WrestleMania during that WWN More Than Mania weekend. So if they start getting pulled from things like that, that's when I'm really going to think they've outlived their usefulness, so to speak. But until then, I think they're just playing a game where, much like with Ring of Honor, Triple H or whomever's made this decision is deciding to kind of push the kid in the playground when the teacher wasn't looking.
And speaking of pushing the kid in the playground when the teacher doesn't looking, let's bring on Scott from New Jersey. Scott, welcome back to PW Torch Livecast.
Happy Friday, guys. How are you? How are you, Bruce? How are you, Rich?
Good. Good. Thanks, Scott.
Great, guys. A couple points I want to ask. First, my first thing is with the Kurt Angle going into the Hall of Fame, I haven't heard much, Bruce, from what your thoughts are, and do you think he can be utilized in any way currently, like maybe in an angle with American Alpha to help get them some more heat or get them more over? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, Kurt Angle, it's a good move. He's an Olympic gold medalist. WWE must have some faith that the issues that led to them dropping him and not wanting to have him work for them for many, many years. They did not want to be in a situation where an Olympic gold medalist, something tragic happened to him on their watch, and they knew what kind of publicity that, with all the other publicity that's gone on with them, that they just didn't want to take that risk. So they must feel a little more comfortable with that. And you know, at all indications, he's doing better. I think it depends on, first, he has to pass their health and wellness. And they're not playing with that. I mean, they know they can't. And so if he can do that, and I don't, you know, he is, his, a freaking broken neck doesn't even begin to tell the tale. And so if he can, you know, if he can get through that, they can do it. But yeah, I mean, I think I hadn't thought about American Alpha with Gable and the you know, the amateur wrestling connection with those guys might be something to do. But I don't think they would use him like that. I don't think they would use him. Tag teams as good as those guys, the potential for those guys are still, you know, mid card. They're gonna pay to get, if they're gonna get Kurt Angle and get him wrestling or get him on television, he's gonna be in something bigger. I think if he wrestles, it's gonna be a one off or a two off, and it would be you know, it would be at WrestleMania. It'd be at a major show. Rich?
Yeah, I think for his health, we mentioned this a little bit on the East Coast cast when I was talking to Travis in the VIP. For his health, it's probably going to be best to put him on that Brock Lesnar plan where it's every couple of months, every couple of shows, he might talk. But in terms of in-ring stuff, you keep it for the big shows and you make people pay to see him. Hopefully pay, since they're giving WrestleMania away for free again for Lapsed, you know, members.
Yeah.
Which is a whole different subject. But yeah, I am a big fan of Angle getting inducted. I would hope he would go to SmackDown if they were going to put anything on there, because it's a natural fit between Gable and Jordan as well as Shelton Benjamin once he's back from his shoulder injury, which he should be recovered from by now. And that would just naturally lend itself to skits, but I don't think that should by and large be what his goodbye is to the WWE. I mentioned to Travis that one of the things I was most annoyed by Kurt's existence in TNA was that last year where he went through the retirement series. He needed to do something like that in the WWE, which I hope they will now do. Give him a chance to wrestle, win or lose, 3 to 5 big matches, maybe 2, if they get the reports back and they're like, well, I don't know if this is going to work. And after that, you know, give him his gold watch and off he can go.
Yeah, I think that one of those matches could be, the last match could be the retirement match. I mean, you can definitely do that gimmick and work with that, and if that's where you're going. I do just want to say, I guess this goes without, I must have thought this goes without saying, Kurt Angle's one of the best professional wrestlers I've ever seen in my life. And in that sense, he deserves to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. I mean, that part of it is definitely there. And he was, you know, he was a main eventer for them, in, you know, in a period where they were successful too. And he had a lot of great performances. So he's something special, in a way that you just don't see, and in a way that even, you know, you can't see even with Brock Lesnar. I mean, he can't, you know, and they both have that. They both have that legitimacy, the credibility that helps them, but his performing in the ring too is way up there. So in a way that very few wrestlers, you know, very, very few wrestlers have. Scott, what else did you have for us?
My other thing, guys, I brought it up to Wade last week, and I was wondering what you think about. Do you think there's any way, Bruce, you've always talked about maybe Bray Wyatt being a character, being like one day down the line a great character babyface, and do you think any way this angle could turn out where, you know, I don't know what Rowan's health situation is, but that they spurf Wyatt, and Wyatt ends up being the one that gets ganged up on, and Orton's even crazier than Wyatt, and they run an angle where Wyatt turns face, because, you know, it seemed like they were going in that direction right after WrestleMania last year, before there were all those injuries. But what do you think about that? Any chance, or am I just crazy?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I don't know that this is the time, although Bray Wyatt seems to be the one that acts more normal among the three. I'm not crazy about them. Just, I thought they should have kept Orton and the three of them together for several months before we started this, but there is an intrigue of what's going to happen, and I do think they're taking their time. I don't know if the breakup is right here immediately, but one of it's either going to be that that Bray Wyatt has mind control over everybody involved to the point where even though they want to break up, they really don't, or you know, or they're baby faces or something. I don't know, but yeah, that could be. They cast out a surprise member, and it would be Bray Wyatt. I would say, you know, Luke Harper. I'd like to see. Hopefully, they're heading toward doing more with him, but I don't think he is a leader, and Orton is not. Not to steal a SmackDown wrestler's gimmick, but Orton is a lone wolf more than a leader, so a character. So I don't know. I mean, there's some. We'll see where all this lays out. I think that, you know, I still think that there needs to be a stronger foundation for the Wyatt family, but they're still in play. Rich, what do you think?
I think when it comes to the Wyatts, I kind of get what Wade's saying as far as the... He always mentions the Instagram picture of them or Bray with Stephanie and kind of taking that, like, hip akimbo, silly pose. And I think there is a level of the mystique that Bray had when he first got into the WWE that's missing, but I can't help but look at him when I see him. And I think if they could change little things, like if they were going to kick him out, and let him keep the Fireflies, because that is, as you've mentioned numerous times, a number one bona fide face thing to do. The fans are putting their cameras up in the air, and they're getting excited. If they're going to keep him heel and they're going to keep the family together, every now and again they should turn the lights on and say, you know what, you people are just like I thought you were. But on the flip side of that, I think back to the silly hologram girl that showed up in the Hell in a Cell, and how he was singing, he got the whole world in his hands, and the fans sang along with him. So I don't know what you can do with Bray Wyatt other than make him a babyface at this point.
Yeah, I did the live cast with Wade after SmackDown on Tuesday night, and Wade was he yelled at me. My feelings were hurt, but he got all over me because I just said that there's a couple of things I think he wasn't real thrilled with me saying, but which makes for a fun show. But when he was talking about Twitter and social media and people hurting their characters, and you mentioned, you know, Bray Wyatt being in silly poses with Stephanie McMahon and all that, and I said, and I do think that if things are strong on television. If people are being sucked into the storyline and the detail work is there and the talent is working really well and the storylines are engaging and all that, then this kind of stuff doesn't hurt as much and it's not that big of a factor. If they're not, though, it's another thing that deteriorates the storyline. But then I'm looking today, and of course today is the day we have President Trump was inaugurated. I'm looking on my timeline on my Twitter, and I just fell out laughing. I mean, here's Bray Wyatt, and he's tweeting the quote from Dr. Martin Luther King about how love drives out hate. And I'm like, it's a great quote. It works it works in so many ways on this day. And but aren't you like the cult leader Charles Manson type in your quote? You know, isn't that your character on television? So we got Charles. You know, we got wrestling's Charles Manson. Having his followers in the woods, and he's out there quoting. He's out there quoting Dr. King. So I kind of smiled. I just thought, you know, Wade. That was points for Wade in this discussion for sure. I mean, it's just kind of like I don't know. I mean, just. I don't know why you just don't do two accounts and one for your character and one for not your character, I mean, one for yourself, and keep that one for yourself to your friends and your family.
They used to do that with Cody Rhodes. Did that before he left WWE.
Yeah,
he had a which became his now public account. He had the Gold Dust, or I'm sorry, the Stardust Twitter, and then he had his own Twitter, which he made private for a short time. And then when he left the WWE, he left the Stardust one alone and made his Cody Rhodes Prince GR, I think it is, Prince CGR or something like that, and made that the default for himself. So, and he did a good job. Like in that one, he was Cody Rhodes talking about matches or talking about Star Wars or, you know, at the time of the election, he was a big supporter of President Trump and explaining why. And then on the Stardust, he's putting up crazy Frank Gorshin-esque poems about the universe and stars and confusing everyone who would read it. So I think there is an avenue to do it. And then there's also people like Dana Brooke, who has her Instagram, which is a mixture of her in character and then her out of character training for the Arnold Classic, which, if I could suggest, is really annoying to me. And I mentioned this to Travis about a year ago with the idea of these women get these jokes from Vince and Dunn about their weight. And this woman is dropping about, from what I can see, maybe 20, 25 pounds in the course of 6 weeks to train for the Arnold Classic while also being a pro wrestler. And all she's getting is, oh, my God, you look so hot. It's like, well, she's about to train to be a bodybuilder, which was her career before this. And people were getting their jokes off because she was injured and got brought back, and she was a little heavier than she was before she left. So what do you want? You can't have her be an athlete and then be a sex symbol without there being, you know, there's a give and take to this, kind of like with the Piggy James stuff.
Yeah, they need to knock it off. But yeah, you're exactly right. And I do think that, like, people, that's got to be millions of people looking at that going, she's Piggy? What extra weight does she have? Because they're not, they don't live, most of us don't live lives where we're, where the only women we come in contact that we work with are fitness models or fitness models types. So unless we're working in, you know, a club that stays open late at night and there might be some glitter involved. I mean, and most of us aren't working in those situations. So that's, yeah.
Party City closes at 10 p.m., Bruce, for the record.
Oh, well, no, we have one here.
Oh, wait, you're not talking about Party City. Never mind.
Yeah, we have one here. It's 24 hours a day. Thank you for the save. But, yeah. No, I'm not. And the people at Party City are pretty much normal folks too. So every time I've been in there, at least. So that those are very good points too. I mean, that's an interesting part of this. Let's go to 616. You're up next on the PW Torch livecast.
Hi, Bruce. How are you doing? This is Eric from Grand Rapids.
Hi, Eric.
Am I crazy to think that Seth Rollins and Triple H are going to face off at WrestleMania or but on a scale of 1 to 10, how possible do you think that is? And that's all I've got. Thanks.
Okay. You're not crazy. Scale to 1 to 10, Rich.
9.5.
I'm going to disagree with Rich and go 9.25. Yeah, it looks like that's where they're going. And you know, things can change, but that's usually whatever plans are the plans that start coming out of the mist for Triple H stay the same. And it's a good thing, but right, you know, he deliberately moving toward that. But yeah, they've already dropped the he came out and challenged Triple H and he didn't show up. So that dangling storyline, that dangling thread is out there, and sooner or later Triple H is going to murder him, and then he'll go for revenge and get his revenge. You know, Seth Rollins will get his revenge in a match where he gets beat up half the time, you know, two thirds of the time, and then gets the pin at the end with the pedigree. So, you know, I think that, yeah, that's, yeah, I think that's a strong possibility. So, let's go to 347. 347, you're up next on the PW Torch livecast.
Hey, Bruce, how you doing? Rich, how you doing? This is Mike from Brooklyn.
Hey, Mike.
Mike.
What's up, Bruce?
That's screw up my. You know, I looked at my wrong list. Excuse me, Mike. I always look for you. So anyway, doing fine. Doing fine. Glad to have you back.
Yeah, changing number.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Good. Happy New Year's, all that good stuff. That's it. Yeah, I got a couple, you know, things to get into tonight. Number one, first off, you know, what's your take on, you know, mine and yours, you know, your good buddy, Mr. Jim Cornette, like kind of shooting down the Kenny Omega Okada match. And, you know, he also, of course, again, had your name in his mouth, you know, in the same sentence. I know you kind of aware of that, Rich, if you heard it.
I didn't know he talked about me again. Huh. All right. My reaction to that's the same. He says the same thing every time, so my reaction to it is the same.
But it's like, I mean, come on, you know, like you got to be doing something right, Bruce. You know, you still got him talking, and you know, it's like with the exception of him, it's like he just downplayed that whole match. where you might have watched the match of the year so far.
You know, I think, Mike, as far as, and I talked to some folks who heard it but didn't. I haven't heard exactly what Jim said, but as far as that goes, parts of it surprised me. But Jim Cornette, once he decides you're an enemy, you're an enemy. And Kenny Omega, you know, wrestled on some weird matches in Japan, working for some promotions there that do some things. You know, such a, you know, he wrestled a sex doll, and I think there's another couple of things. And to me, you know, I'm a long time fan like Cornette. He goes back even further than I do, and he has a very set idea of some things. And I just look at it like, you know, that good actor who was in that crappy television show, and then starts working in the movies and earns an Academy Award. I'm not offended, or I'm not like that actor never should have gotten that part because he was bad in this television show, or he did this stupid television show that didn't work. You know, Cornette was very negative with the Young Butts super kid kicking that kid, and that those kind of things really bother him. And so once you're on that other side, I think he looked at it like Kenny Omega must not be a good wrestler, and then now all of a sudden the guy's in the best match that ever happened, and so he's watching it with a critical eye because he's not going to change his mind, or he's not going to change on that. And so the part that really, really surprised me, though, was that he criticized the slow burn, that he criticized the match starting slowly and building, because if anybody on the face of the planet would know of championship wrestling matches that worked that same way of starting out slow while two top fighters feel each other out and then build and build and build, it would be Jim Cornette. And so that part I just thought, good grief. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, and he can have a different opinion, but the idea of cooperation, that you can see there's cooperation in certain spots. If you're looking for that in any match, you can see that they are cooperating. It isn't a, you know, it isn't a shoot, and it doesn't look like a shoot. People that are having a shoot fight don't do the things that Omega and Okada did. They don't do the things that Rick Steamboat and Ric Flair did. I mean, they don't do the things that Shawn Michaels and Undertaker did. It's just so I don't know. I mean, I usually look at Jim Cornette as not happy as I am. I stand by what I wrote. I stand by why I wrote it, and his actions toward me and toward the torch, you know, were deplorable. And he, you know, and he, but he loves his enemies and all that stuff. And I always look at it like, as much entertainment as I got out of him, and as much as I learned watching him and listening to him, I that positive outweighs the negative. But it is kind of odd to me. I'm hearing is we have this kind of odd relationship where, you know, I don't know. That he calling this out again. So anyway, Rich, any reaction to this?
Sure. Couple of things. One, I hadn't heard it, but I don't listen to a lot of Jim Cornette stuff because a lot of the aforementioned, because it seems to be that's a pattern with a lot of people, and I don't want to waste the time parsing how much of this is him legitimately angry and how much is this him trying to get a response. And I liken it to this way, kind of off of what you were talking about, which is, you know, funny we didn't talk about this off air. You don't knock a person like Tom Hanks for winning an Oscar or three Oscars because he was in Bosom Buddies. So why?
Wait a minute, Rich. I loved Bosom
Buddies. I like Bosom Buddies. Don't get me wrong.
I was such a fan of that show, so I'm a little offended that you went there with that one. But go ahead.
But people would look at it like, oh my God, this guy was in this? Or, you know, okay, let me fast forward. The fact that Leonardo DiCaprio was Luke in Growing Pains and then goes off to become the monolith of movies he's become. You know, you don't take that. That's a whole body of work in someone's career. So with wrestling, it's the same thing to me. And listening to his one-hour-long interview, his being Kenny Omega, with Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez, he mentioned in particular he spent this year trying to prove to both New Japan Brass, the fans, Japanese media, wrestling media on the whole, I can be a serious wrestler. I can be deserving of the role you gave me when I won the G1 Climax. And I think he did a darn good job leading to it, and he knocked it out of the park in that match. Now, I'm not, you know, I've never been one for doing star ratings. I really like Dave's. I really like following how he does it, and I'm not as good as you are when it comes to evaluating how close I can get to his, but I absolutely thought that was one of the greatest matches I'd ever seen. And for Cornette to jump on it and say it wasn't because he was a comedy wrestler just smacked to me of, as in anything, there's always going to be that person that says, well, you know, Titanic was the biggest movie of all time, but it wasn't for me. You know, that's fine. This is all fun things. I actually really appreciate it. There was a young lady I follow on Twitter, and she put up her New Year's resolution is to enjoy comedy matches or lucha or something that she usually doesn't as much as she does the matches that she's always into, because you can find good things, and I don't want it to be like a Pollyanna, like everything's good, but there's nothing wrong with being a comedy wrestler, just like there's nothing wrong with being a purely serious wrestler. I'm not going to hold Kurt Angle's career back because he wore a small top hat and played a ukulele in the background on a Raw.
You know, that's a good point. Although my New Year's resolution has been that I've been too positive. Sean Roddick said, you've been more positive lately. And, you know, my career is based on this caustic tearing down of everything in front of me. But, you know, the what Britt Whitmire calls the killer of all joy. And so tomorrow night I'll be at Gibsonville at the CWF Mid-Atlantic show. And I'm going to be looking for flaws and looking for things. If you saw this week, they put up CWF Mid-Atlantic, the two main events of Battle Cave, and Wade Keller and I will be talking about this, but because I want Wade to watch this, of Eric Royal and Andrew Everett, and then Brad Attitude and Trevor Lee, and it was one of the best shows I've ever been to in this arena. So I have been feeling bad about all this, and so I want to get back to what, you know, I want to get back to what made Jim Cornette hate me. I mean, so it's, you know, that kind of thing. Although I will say that the column I wrote this week is more like, you know, more like my resolution than not. Let's take a second to
question for you, Bruce, too,
yes.
About CWF.
Yes.
Are you going to be? Is that the show that's going to be the Apocalypto challenge for the Hardys for them to finish up their whatever situation they had with the Rock and Roll Express?
Yeah,
I saw an advertisement for something along that.
Yeah, they're Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, the Broken Hardy brand, you know, determining to be the greatest tag team in all of time and space, which of course is going to lead to the Young Bucks, ironically enough, and so. Tomorrow night, there is a tournament in Gibsonville for the tag team that will face the Hardys. And in Gibsonville, a big show for them on next Sunday, Royal Rumble in the afternoon. And TNA will be filming. The Hardys will be filming at least that one main event at the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium. So yeah, all that stuff comes together. So hopefully, if you listen, I know we've got live cast listeners that come to Gibsonville. So say hello again, you know, come see us. But that would be cool. Let me Chael Sonnen and Tito Ortiz on Bellator tomorrow night also, and so that leads us to this.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com.
Let's hear from our friend Jason in Australia. Jason, welcome to PW Torch Livecast.
Good morning, Bruce and Rich. How are you today?
Excellent, Jason. Excellent.
All right. I've got a few points that I wanted to raise, so I'll get right into it. I didn't hear what Cornette said about the Omega-Okada match, but, you know, if he's going to talk about cooperating in a wrestling match, you know, when a guy throws another guy into the ropes and he actively comes back to you, that's cooperation. You know, when somebody jumps to take a choke slam, cooperation. You get punched in the head 10 times and you don't believe, that's cooperation from his opponent. So I don't know where he's going with that, because anyone can pick apart so many different things in a wrestling match, even from 50 years ago, where you can say that's cooperation. So I think that criticism is just out of line.
Professional wrestling is a physical language. I mean, worked professional wrestling is a physical language to tell a story. And you, as a viewer, as a fan, we learn the language, and then we learn what, you know, we learn what to take seriously, and we learn what to, and what works and what doesn't work, and that's what that is. And again, I really do feel kind of bad. Not, you know, I talked to someone who listened to it really closely, and we had a long conversation about it. But I feel bad. I sort of feel that we should that. Doing it secondhand, but still, worse things.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard him criticize these type of matches before, where it looks like it's all an act and everyone's cooperating. But you know, but really, if you look hard enough, you can pick apart anything. You know, and I like to see realistic wrestling, but sometimes I think he's actively looking for things to pick apart. So look, I'll just leave it at that. As far as Bray Wyatt is concerned, you're talking about him. Look, for 3.5 years, this guy, let's be honest with his character, not him personally, but his character, he's achieved nothing. I mean, every major feud he's come against is pretty much lost, with the exception of the Ambrose feud. But it didn't really lead him anywhere. So for me, if they were to abandon the Wyatt family tomorrow, I'd be more than happy with that. I'd love to see him go out on his own, embrace the fans, and we the fans become the family. We're the Wyatt family, so we're with him. When you look at it, I mean, they won the tag team title and only kept that for about 2 to 3 weeks. Nothing Wyatt has done has led to anything substantial. He's all talk and no action. The potential was always there for the character, and it had shining moments, but he hasn't done anything worth of significance. So for me, Bruce and Rich, if they were to abandon the family and just split it all up and let Wyatt go by himself, I'd be more than happy with that.
I would be, as long as they've got a strong reason to do it, as long as there's a strong motivation for him, and he's put in a position where what he does counts for something, and not just winning, or it can be winning the Universal title, but it should be even more than that. Rich?
Yeah, I think really, for me, well, first let me talk about the Cornette thing one last time, I guess. When it comes to cooperation, I watch New Japan, and one of my favorite things to do is watch any pro wrestler wrestle Suzuki, because Minoru Suzuki, even though he was trained by Carl Gotch and is just the best when it comes to pro wrestling, he's basically an MMA guy. So he doesn't get Irish whipped. He doesn't do a lot of cooperation.
Right.
And most wrestlers have to work around the fact that he will not do it.
Well, I mean,
leads to really good matches.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry, Bruce.
I'll chime in on that and go, you know, go back 40, 50 years. But one of the all-time great wrestlers here in this area and anywhere around the world was John Valentine, Greg Valentine's father. And he did not bounce against the ropes. He did not jump on the ropes. He didn't do anything. He stood in the middle of the ring, and either he, you know, wrestle you down with a headlock or hit you as hard, you know, hit you with what Sheamus uses, that forearm to the chest, except he hit so much harder than Sheamus did. And, you know, fans heard it and the opponent heard it, and everything he did, he could explain. Everything he did, you know, was kept very strictly in something that'd be a wrestling match or a fight, and he was very effective at it. So yeah, there's all kinds of styles. It's sort of like that resolution. It's not that comedy wrestling is bad. It's that bad comedy wrestling is bad. You know, right place, right. Context and right place in the right time, it's great. So, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, Lucha Libre takes people getting used to. Japanese wrestling takes a little getting used to. American wrestling, WWE takes a little getting used to. So, in fact, it gets a little bit too much getting used to, I think, these days for casual people to get into. But, yeah, that's definitely part of it. I'm going to throw it back to Jason. Jason?
Yeah, you're talking about Seth Rollins. I brought this up on the post-Raw show. I mean, I do feel sorry for his character that it's just been all over the place the past 2 years, and I feel like they really haven't capitalized on his talent. Now you've got him facing Triple H at WrestleMania, the returning godfather of NXT, everyone's favorite villain that they love to cheer because they like to show that, hey, I know what you're doing behind the scenes and I know you're cool Triple H and you reach out to me, so I'm going to cheer you. If this is the case, right, I would have no issue if they book some type of angle at WrestleMania where we see a double turn, Rollins goes back to being a heel, Kappa, you know, steps down on that and says, okay, I'm going to go back to being a heel and really clamp down on my attitude. And finally, that puts Triple H in a face role. I just don't like the way this is being set up for Rollins. What are your guys' opinion on that?
Rich?
I think it's funny because this is shaping up to be just like it was last year. Triple H sets up an angle, disappears for football season, shows up around the Rumble, and can help take credit during Mania for the resurgence. So when it comes to Rollins, I'm with Bruce when it comes to how that match is probably going to go. But in terms of him, he's stuck more than anything, more than Triple H. He's stuck in the shadow of Roman Reigns and them not accepting he's not a face right now. All of these decisions that have led to the muddying of his waters are a direct result of them deciding that we have to turn him because that will take things away from Roman otherwise. And until they get that through their heads, it's going to be Seth Rollins. It's going to be a Kevin Owens face turn. It's going to be, you name the person that gets hot, it's always going to be under the lens of, but how does this help or hurt Roman?
Yeah, I agree. And part of this, you know, as far as Triple H going babyface, Triple H would be well served and would help WWE to play the same character that he plays on NXT. As far as it'd be good to have a baby, you know, to have a strong McMahon family babyface, stronger than Shane McMahon is. You know, as you said, the uncle that comes and gives everybody cookies, because they're very Oreo cookies, that Shane is, to have him do that. But the problem with him doing that is if you remember, it looked for about 2 weeks that the character of Triple H was not on the same page as the character of Stephanie McMahon, and they wrote that out real quickly. Stephanie McMahon enjoys playing heel, and so the husband's got to go along with it. They can't have the two of them at cross purposes. And I don't know that she's interested or they're interested in having her play babyface. And it's ridiculous, but I think that kind of feeds into it, that those things could happen. Jason, appreciate the call as always. Appreciate all the callers. Rich, good job again. I will be back with Wade Keller on the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show this weekend. Lots to talk about, and we'll do that. And of course, you can you can subscribe to PW Torch by listening to PW Torch VIP by listening to this fabulous offer.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables with a one-hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. and also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member one week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.